And where are you from? Are you from Los Angeles?
I'm not. I'm Canadian.
Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's popular recently.
Is it?
I had a guest on the show earlier this morning who, when Donald Trump was elected president, she decided she was going to move to Canada. That was 18 months ago, and it's not that easy.
No, it's not.
To move to Canada.
No. My stock went way up on Tinder.
Yeah.
I like it.
The best joke I have is, and this has really happened, if you're on OkCupid and you don't log in for a while, they send you an email saying, hey, would you like to answer the next question? And the next question that they sent me was, do you think you would enjoy being humiliated during sex? And I just went to, are you asking me if I'd like to be married again? All right, let's start the show. You ready?
Sure.
You've done a podcast before, right?
I haven't.
You haven't?
I'm delighted to be here.
You seem so comfortable and
well,
at ease.
Well, thank you.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. My guest this week is producer-performer Joey... Yeah, I messed it up.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I did. My guest my guest this week is producer-performer Joey Bothwell.
You got it.
Here to talk about her play Cowboy Mouth, which is written by Sam Shepard and Patti Smith. It's happening at part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival this June 2018, which is today, is the beginning of June. We'll talk all about that and more in a moment, but first a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. My guest today is Joey Bothwell. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
I think I messed up the beginning part because I had your name and Neely's name.
This is true.
And so I had to change the verb from art is on the fly.
Whoa.
And it was
talent.
Just too much for my small brain. My small brain got completely overloaded by that small change.
Just a little diction, that's all.
Little diction problem. Yeah, I'm going to leave that one alone.
Uh-huh,
so
me too.
The play, Cowboy Mouth.
A cowboy mouth.
Yeah, what do you want to tell? Well, let me say, first of all, it's at the Actors Company.
It is.
916 North Formosa,
mm-hmm.
Which is it's an awesome space, right? They have three spaces there?
They do, which I feel is ideal for Fringe. So Fringers can kind of park once, and they can see a theater that's, you know, seats 100 people or 56 people, or our little theater, which is only 25 seats.
25?
25. It is tiny.
Is it sold out already?
Tomorrow is, yes.
Tomorrow is.
Yeah,
yeah,
and fantastic. My hope is that with some good reviews and some people that word of mouth, it spreads like wildfire and we're sold out for the rest of the run.
Yeah, all right.
That's the hope.
Tell us some things about the show.
Sure.
A question. When did the two of them write this play?
Well, that's what I was just getting into. So the wonderful, what I fell in love with about this show is it's a one-act play, obviously. It's under 50 minutes. And Sam Shepard had been contracted to write two one-act plays, Beast Bait Bog, which starred his current wife, Olan Jones, at the time. This was 1970.
Okay.
And then he was contracted to do this second show. Meanwhile, he played in a band in New York, things we may not have known about Sam Shepard.
Yeah, he had a lot of, he was into a lot of stuff. Yeah,
very multi-talented. Yeah. So he was a drummer in a band, and he went by this alias by the name of Slim. So Patti Smith was hot on the scene at the time, and she, I guess, fell in love with this drummer, Slim. So she was seen around New York City with him, doing the streets, and people would be like, oh my God, you're hanging out with Sam Shepard. And she was like, no, his name's Slim. He's not, you know, this famous playwright. So turns out they ended up having a little tryst, a little love affair. They locked themselves in the Chelsea Hotel for 2 days, passing a typewriter back and forth with some whiskey and some drugs and God knows what else. And they came up with Cowboy Mouth. So Cowboy Mouth is basically just their alchemy, their relationship on fire at that time. And the wonderful, beautiful part about this play is there is no story. There's nothing that really happens. It's just this wonderful hour of these two people in a slightly dysfunctional but totally functional relationship. You know, there's an element of she's held him at gunpoint, quote unquote, but the reality is that he's, you know, he's exploring the better version of himself, his inner higher self, and whether or not he wants to kind of conform to society's norms at that time, and Patty was giving him that outlet, or at least this is what I've deciphered from the show. So I guess what happened is that on their opening night, Alan Jones, his wife, was playing in the first show, and then him and Patty and the director played in Cowboy Mouth.
So they actually
they
performed it themselves.
Only once, and it was too much for Sam. So the next day he packed up his wife and his kid and he went to London. And every night Patty came to the theater with hopes that Sam would show back up, but he never did.
He never did. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, now it sounds like a total fairy tale story, right?
Well, and then the beautiful part, obviously life goes on and, you know, 40, 50 years later, Sam was ill and obviously Patty was still in contact with him. And she was the one that actually ended up spending his last 2 weeks together, writing his memoirs, anything that was kind of coming out. And so there was a really beautiful friendship there that's worth honoring. And it's really apparent and alive in the text. And what we've been able to find between my scene partner, Eddie Mills, and I has just been so joyful. You can really hear that these two were really connected. And yeah, it didn't work out in a romantic way, but they definitely had a connection that lasted through both of their entire lifetimes.
Yeah. It is interesting when you meet somebody and you have an instant connection.
Yeah.
And it just,
what a beautiful thing.
Whoosh, it gets on fire. And frequently you don't know what it is or what it should be or could be or anything. And that's part of what makes it so amazing.
Totally.
Yeah, and sometimes it just lasts 2 days and then... Yeah, that's it. Somehow.
Or it continues on for years. I mean, I think that's also part of that Tinder conversation we were having, is this is part of my problem, is that, like, I can't be swiping and looking at a picture of somebody because I don't care. My visual aspect of my brain doesn't really give a shit. It's once you get in front of somebody and, you know, you smell the pheromones and the chemicals and whatever is happening, that thing that we can't really articulate, that is so important to me. And I think that that's what was happening between these two, is they were really honoring that sense of whatever that is.
Whatever that was. But they felt it.
Yeah.
And they went with that.
Certainly did. Yeah. And it really radiates off the page.
I can totally see them locked into the Chelsea Hotel. Have you ever been there?
I haven't.
It's
I've been
like
to the outside.
It's like one of those places you go to the Mecca.
It's magic.
So many people have done some weird stuff there that you got to check it out.
Well, and we've really, I mean, we've tried to create a little bit of an homage to the Chelsea Hotel at that time with our set deck, but there's only so much you can do in 15 minutes when you load in for
a friend sure.
show.
Well, it's, I don't remember what that looks like, but, you know, it's a theater. It's kind of empty and scratchy. And
totally.
You know,
well, and that also works in our favor because the theater is so small. There is only 25 seats. You really do feel like a fly on the wall in the Chelsea Hotel in 1970, you know, watching mom and dad kind of fight in front of you, you know, as like a child in the backseat of a car, you know. You're a little uncomfortable because it's like, ooh, these two people, we shouldn't be witnessing it. But it makes for a good good show, if you ask me.
Well, yeah, I'm going to come check it out.
Yeah, please do.
I think Patti Smith is awesome. You know, for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
You know, this is
because
one.
The
music. But she did. She had relationships, long-term relationships, with a whole bunch of creative people.
Totally.
And she's still doing the thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I think at this time it was such an interest. I mean, I've been in this play for a little while now, so it just keeps morphing. And there's all these different interpretations of what was happening at that time. The more research that I do. You know, I think that it was a really lovely effort at that time to boost Patti Smith's confidence and her, you know, make her star rise a little bit more. And I think it helped.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
She does sing in the play a little bit.
Okay.
He plays guitar. It's a really interesting amalgamation of their two worlds really colliding.
Yeah.
And these two creatives coming together and, you know, creating an art baby.
Now, I don't remember exactly, but she hadn't been in New York very long at this time, right? She just got there in 67, 68, something like that. She had just arrived.
Yeah, she was brand new to the scene. And I think that's what's partially so endearing about the play for me is that it really was the beginning of something for her. Sam, I think, was really holding space for her to you know, take a shot at it.
Yeah.
And the play really emulates that. There is a sense of Patty being a muse. The moral question of the play is, do you step into your own right of your better self, you know, your quote-unquote rock and roll savior?
Yes.
We talk a lot about in the play. And I think she finds that near the end of the play. You know, it's open to interpretation, that's for sure. It is quite abstract in that way.
Well, that's the fun of doing a play, is that you get to make associations, your own associations, and bring them to the
table. Absolutely. And there was just such a clever connection between Patty spent a little bit of time in Paris really studying surrealism and abstract poetry. And so she speaks a lot about this character, Gérald de Nerval. And he had a pet lobster, and so this lobster makes an appearance in the show, and that's really cool, because all of a sudden you're like, what is happening? You know, what is this? And it offers you a chance to really reflect on, you know, the elephant in the room in relationships,
right?
And what that kind of represents. And if you come see the show, the way that we have made this lobster has been it's a highlight all on its own.
All right,
we've gone kind of a puppet mascot costume.
Okay.
He's cool. He's very cool. He's a big presence and worth the $20 to come
see. All
right,
check it out. Now, have you done this show before?
Yes. I did the show earlier this year, and unfortunately, the director and I did not have the same artistic vision for the show.
That happens.
So I really wanted to honor how I interpreted the script and what was on the page and the era it was set in, and I was really adamant about that. So I threw my hat in the ring for the Fringe and got a smaller theater, and here we are,
right,
2 months later, putting it up again with a different cast and a different crew and a totally different vibe and a totally different exploration.
It's amazing how a different team, even when you're the performer, can make the whole thing feel so different.
Totally. Yeah. It's a completely different show, and I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of this version and what has come out of it. Yeah.
And it happens, you know, the director has a certain way of looking at the thing. And
absolutely.
Yeah. So you don't have to throw any stones about that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. To each their own.
To each their own, yeah. Anything else you want to say about the show?
What else do I want to say about the show? We have a lovely team. Sarah Jane Kruchowski, she's our director on the show. Her and I connected last year when we shot an ABC TV series together called In an Instant. And it was important to me to, you know, keep the directors that you really click with close. We have an all-female production team, so Neely is my other executive producer, and then Emma Harris is our associate producer. And it's just been a dream. It's just been so nice to have that female support and that nourishing energy surrounding the production. It's got a lovely, joyful quality that has been really protected by the mama bears is the production.
Fantastic.
And then, of course, the space, the actors' company has been so lovely. And Lauren over there, she's been just a dream to work with. And, I mean, connecting with everybody in the Fringe.
That's a whole amazing thing, right?
Yeah.
We said 350-something different
362
shows.
362 or something like that. Something just beautiful, which makes, you know, that inspires me so much, because I owned a theater company in Canada before moving down here and produced a lot of theater that I was really proud of. And when I moved to L.A., you know, there's always that stigma that there's not a strong community theater here, and there's not a lot of good theater that's being produced. And I'd like to challenge that, because I think that's a stigma that we no longer need, nor is it true.
No, I don't think it's true at all.
360 shows are going to show us that, you know, and I look forward to
and
seeing.
It's definitely not the same kind of theater thing that you get in New York, you know what I mean, or even Chicago. But people here are working.
Yeah.
And like we had last year with the Actors' Equity, you know, if you work in TV or film and you're eking out a living doing little co-star, guest star commercials, you want to do a play.
Yeah,
and
you want to sink your teeth into
this
something.
This is how you work, yeah.
Well, and I've always, you know, I've never been someone to just sit on my laurels and wait for the phone to ring. That's not That doesn't.
It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
It doesn't do anything.
No, and it's never been something that I've been good at. So I'm very much, you know, get your hands dirty and get in there and see what comes out and learn from your mistakes and hope for the best.
So, all right. Yeah. Well, Cowboy Mouth, written by Sam Shepard and Patti Smith in 1970.
Got it.
Yep, at the Actors Company, 916 North Formosa Avenue here in Hollywood. All right, sounds good. I'm going to come.
I hope so.
We should do a swap with the comps and stuff
Love
like
to.
That. Yeah,
Love
all right.
To.
Well, I have some other questions.
Please, by all means.
Did you do any research? Did you listen to the
I
show?
I did. Okay. I listened to an episode. It was wonderful to hear you.
What'd you hear?
Your latest, the...
Late on my... That's right, don't worry about it.
Boys in episode 80.
Okay, no, it doesn't matter. How old were you when you first ran away from home?
I don't think I've ever run away from home.
Really?
That's a lie. I was 18. I was 18 and I ran away to a cruise ship. I was a dancer on cruise ships. And straight out of high school, I did a submission video and ended up on a cruise ship for 3.5 years, touring the world and working in beautiful full-scale productions and worked like 6 hours a week.
That's really running away.
Yeah, I ran
you
away to a five-star floating hotel.
Took away for left for 3 years.
It's true. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I came back. I would come back for like a month in between contracts, but yeah, I got
That's
out of there as fast
quite
as I could.
Quite an adventure.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it started my career. You know, it was nice to be 18 and open waters, and I worked 6 hours a week and on these beautiful shows. If you've ever been on a cruise, the production value is stunning. These shows are million-dollar shows. They're gorgeous.
I have kind of a bias against a cruise.
Do you?
Yeah.
Go on. Tell me everything.
My expectations are that I'm not going to enjoy being there.
Yeah.
That I'm not going to enjoy being in this controlled environment where there are options, but I would feel trapped, I think, psychologically, philosophically.
Yeah. I mean, I would spend 9 months on the boat. So it was like Groundhog Day. But instead of a day, it's a week. You would see the same passengers come on, really. Same faces. Yeah. You would have, you know, veggie chili on the buffet on Tuesdays and, you know, prime rib on Fridays. And there was a very, it did feel like you were living in purgatory a little.
Well,
that's for sure.
Yeah, my style of vacation is to go someplace and literally get lost and think like, okay, this time you've really done it. You're going to die. And then when I don't die, I say, wow, that was a great,
that's really
I have
telling.
A great story.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. It's just such the opposite of what I seek.
Yeah. Well, life. I mean, you come on a cruise to just not have to take, you know, it's a big babysitter. You just give somebody your passport, literally, and then you have to go back and you get X amount of time in certain ports, and then you come on and, you know, you do a line dance or two at the Tex-Mex evening and for sail away, you know.
Now, you must have some gossip or some salacious details about the people that...
About cruises?
About the people that all work there. You know, that must...
Oh, my
it's
God.
A totally different...
That's a whole other podcast, but
that's
yes.
a different podcast.
I'm actually writing, hopefully, a TV series about my time on cruise ships because I have so many stories, but what's a good one that I can... Oh, this is a good one.
So it's like The Love Boat, but, you know, behind the scenes.
Basically, the show that I'm writing is Love Boat meets Glee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, right? We kind of want to watch.
So, salacious story or something.
Salacious story. So, I was 18 years old when I first arrived on my first cruise ship. And I didn't understand the term fresh meat until this. And so I got on board and like the dancers are coming on board. And there's a totem pole. There's a hierarchy. There's status that you have as certain members, you know, engineers or captain, obviously, cruise staff, things like this. So as a dancer, an 18-year-old dancer from Canada, there was this, all of a sudden, I was fresh meat. There's about 800 crew members on board.
Wow, it's a lot. Yeah,
a lot.
Probably more than you realize. Yeah.
Right, and not a lot of them are female. So I get on board, and it's my first week, and I'm like, I have to do my laundry. So I go down, and I go into the crew members' laundry area, and I put my stuff in the laundry, and I come back a little later, and I put my stuff in the dryer, and then I take my stuff back up to my stateroom, and I'm going through, and I'm like, where is all of my underwear? So I start to inquire with some of the old veterans on board, and I said, I don't know what happened. I don't have any more underwear. I did my laundry. And the dance captain at the time, Nicole Robertson, I'll never forget her, she looked at me square in the eyes, and she's like, oh, honey, your underwear is long gone, and it is on a black market right now. And I said, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
So there's a scale. If you can get the underwear before it comes out of the washing machine, so if it's dirty, is a different price, as opposed to if it comes out of the dryer clean. And there's a whole other price point that you can get this dirty underwear for if you can name the dancer or the female that whose underwear it belonged to. And it would be hundreds of dollars for just this one pair of underwear.
Wow.
On the black market that is on the cruise ship that I worked on as I was 18 years old. Thank you, Celebrity Cruises.
There you go. You learn something. An
education
right away.
In
so I guess
having
if they got
to
it,
sit with your laundry for the next year of my life.
They got it before you even got it in the washer. That would be, you know, the best.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I'm glad you didn't drop any in the hallway. Well, maybe you did.
Who knows? Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. I probably had like a good 7 or 8 pairs of underwear that were gone, and somebody made a huge profit off of.
Well, plus the added benefit is then you got to walk around without underwear.
Well, this is true.
You know, I mean,
it doesn't go so well for a dancer. You're, you know, you got to perform, so you're.
I know.
You need to have a thong and.
I know,
and
but for other people fishnets. Watching, they may.
They were delighted.
Yeah, I see.
True.
All right. When you were a child, you had an imaginary friend. Yes or no?
No. No, I had real friends.
Okay.
I had a pig in a blanket that were, you know, my partners in crime, but not an imaginary friend.
A stuffed pig.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, then that question doesn't really work for you. Okay, that's good.
It doesn't.
You have a somewhat quirky or bedtime sleeping... you have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
I meditate before I go to bed. I let the universe roll through me with some beautiful podcast meditation somewhere that usually puts me to sleep in a corpse-like position.
That's as quirky as it gets, meditating. Well, I like what you said, though, about you're going to let the universe roll through you.
Oh, totally.
That, to me, is the thing to do, is completely submit to being alive.
Yeah, I believe in quantum physics. I believe in there's by you, there's in you, and then there's through you. Mm. And there are three different levels of the quantum field. And I like to watch the universe dance through this rad nervous system of mine and see what it does.
And let it do whatever it's going to do.
Let it play me like a violin.
It's not always comfortable.
No, easy, definitely
but,
not.
You know, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's better. Yeah. Now, I do have a special question that I ask everybody that comes in the show. And it's sponsored by a different sponsor every week. So let's give a shout out to the sponsor first. Our sponsor this week is Motel 6.
Ooh.
Yeah. More than 1,100 discount.
Fitting.
Yeah, that's right. More than 1,100 discount motel locations nationwide. They also have Studio 6 for extended stays.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
No. Yeah.
Screw you, Airbnb.
Yeah, so you could do an extended stay at Studio 6. It's a different building, a whole different kind of things. Reservations 800-466-8356, or you can get their smartphone app.
Oh.
Just in time for summer vacation, driving around the country, you say all of a sudden, where the hell are we? Rocky Mountain someplace. There must be a Motel 6 nearby.
They've got your back.
Let's try it out. All right.
There's an app for that.
There's even an app for Motel 6. Okay. So there you go, Motel 6. Thank you very much. So here's the question. Here's the thing. You may have heard, I have been doing this thing for quite some time where I have given permission to some family and friends that they can hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime. And the reason I've done it is that it's a thing that makes people happy. They want to do it, but they're never allowed to do it. So I figured if I just let them, then they wouldn't have to be angry. They could throw it with love, and I could receive it with love, and then we would all just have a good time.
Brilliant.
So it's happened a bunch of times. But the question is this. You're going to do this. You're going to give permission to one person, living or dead, real or imaginary, anybody you want, one person that is going to throw this pie with love, and you're going to receive it, you know, openly. Who would you like that person to be?
I'd like that person to be Amar Dhaliwal, because when I was 13, Amar Dhaliwal,
okay.
Bless his heart. When I was 13, no, 15.
Okay.
15. He was my dance partner, my Adagio dance partner. And he picked me up in some beautiful lift, and I screwed it up, and I nailed him right in the balls with my heel. And I remember him collapsing to the ground in such agony, but he so gently put me down first to make sure I was okay before he completely splayed out like a yard sale on the floor. So I would like to let him give me a metaphoric swift kick to the balls.
In the form of this pie.
In the form of this pie in my face.
All right. Now, are you still in touch with Amar?
Yeah. I mean, on Facebook, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And where, is he local or is he someplace far away?
No, he's in Canada. He's got a lovely child and a wife. And he had a beautiful ballet career for many years.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When you mentioned that, what is the dance? What were you doing? You said Adagio. What is it?
Adagio is partner work. So
In a ballet.
Yeah. Ours was a jazz piece.
A jazz piece. Yeah. You had heels, you said. So
yeah.
You wouldn't have heels in so you were doing some jazz thing and he lifted you when you came down.
Yep, I got him. Yeah. It was actually on the way up, poor guy.
On the way up.
Yeah, the momentum. He was taking me up and my heel just went right in his crotch. Got him real well.
So you had to actually get the height and then he had to put you down. Mm-hmm. So it was even like double the amount of time.
Totally.
That he did not drop you on your head.
That he could not breathe, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that's what was happening. And his... bless his heart, just made sure that I came down nice and smoothly. And
all right. Well, that seems nice then that he's going to then, in retaliation, but kind, you know, even the score by hitting you in the face with the pie.
This is true.
All right. And where might this happen? You get any visuals about where, when?
Probably in that dance studio, Shelley's Dance Company's dance studio in Edmonton, Alberta. Right in Studio 3.
Is it still there? Shelley's?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
all right.
Her daughter is Stacey Tukey, who's a big choreographer on So You Think You Can Dance.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
I did not know. That show is amazing.
It is amazing. I was on Canada's version of it.
You were?
I was.
When I first heard about it, I was like, come on, really?
Oh, it's beautiful.
But, you know, it's surprising.
Dancers are the athletes of God.
Yeah.
Dancing is the foundation of my life. Dancing is everything. Yeah. I dance through life.
And are you doing any particular kind of dance now?
I've retired. I owned a dance company for 4 years here in LA, and I loved it. But I'm of an age now where my dance shoes should be hung up and admired from afar. But you know, I take them off the hanger every once in a while.
You're still dancing.
It's true.
No, I know you can dance all the time.
Yeah.
Now I want you to come to Contact Improvisation. Have you done any contact improvisation?
I have. I've done quite a bit. Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, yeah. I do a lot of yoga as well, and I believe that it is constantly teaching us about how we live our lives. You know, when things get uncomfortable, do you lean into it? Do you push through it? Do you fall out of it? Do you leave? You know, what do you do?
Right.
What do you do when things get uncomfortable?
Right.
So I love that. I love that beautiful contact improv metaphor of being able to support each other as you, quote unquote, lose balance.
Stay in when you want to bail.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, there's one more thing that I like to do on this show, which is the anagram stuff.
Okay.
Which means to take the letters of a word or phrase and then to just rearrange them to spell other things.
Cool.
It's not a test. I went in and did some and... you can do it online, so it's not like I'm a genius. But the game is that then you look at the things, some of the things that come out, and you say, well, does this mean something? Can we get some new meaning? So here's one. I put this in. It was hard. I don't know if this means anything. So I did J. Bothwell Productions, and it anagrams to this. Read that.
John Obstructed Pillow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what that means. How you could, if John could block your access to a pillow, or
John obstructed pillow.
You getting anything? It's like a free association.
Yeah, I mean, John obstructed pillow. Yeah, because of the play, I guess my brain goes to hear is that, you know, he obstructed me hitting him with a pillow, or or he was hiding something behind the pillow, or Maybe it was a hemorrhoid seat for a toilet. How's that?
That seat, there you go. Now we got to something
we got there.
New. I had no idea, but thank you. That you're good at this game. Better than I am.
Took me a second to get there, but we get there.
Okay, now here's another one. I thought that this might actually have to do with your previous production of the show. Jay Bothwell Productions also anagrams to this. Read this one.
Objector shutdown pill.
Don't you wish you had one like that for your old director?
Amen. Amen. Just, you know, just a little Valium would have been just really nice, you know? No, I shouldn't say that.
Well, we're not mentioning who that person is, and now we're speaking hypothetically.
Yes.
We're having it fun.
Objector shutdown
pill. I thought, that's
oh,
got to be.
Oh, God, I wish it was that easy. Just
I knew
here,
that one.
Sweetie.
I knew that
take
one.
This. With some peanut butter.
Yeah. Are you a dog person? You have dogs?
Yeah, I do, yes.
All right, so
yeah, he almost came today, but then I was like, I don't know.
Did you just meet Greg's little dog?
Yes.
Yeah, she goes with
did
him.
Did she? Yeah.
She came
Scooter usually comes with me wherever I go. I just didn't know. I didn't want to impose.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
What kind of dog is Scooter?
He's a good dog.
I'm sure, but what breed of dog?
He's a rescue, so but he's a five and a half little scruff a muffin that's adorable and super portable and just a rat.
Yeah, that's good. All right, well, next time you can bring him because
I will.
Totally fine with it. I had also Jennifer Neely Shamam, who was your co-producer. Is that right?
My co-producer,
And I got a couple interesting ones for her, even though she's not here. This first one I like.
I do, too.
My Name Heals.
Oh, beautiful.
Right? Does that fit her? Does she have a calming influence on people?
Oh, my God. She's, well, in all honesty, she's, so sweet. She's a very healing angel for me in the show. She says that... Lauren asked her, because she saw the show, Lauren asked her and said, she said to her, oh, did you see the previous production that Joey was in? And Neely said, I sure did, and I took the best part of it, and now we're creating a new one. So she's definitely a healer. She's definitely a beautiful angel in my life, that's for sure.
So see, that was right on.
Bang.
Neely Shamam, Neely, My Name Heals.
It is, yeah.
All right, now I had this other one for her.
My Ashen Male.
Yeah, I figure she probably dated some white guy somewhere. Right? Like some pasty white guy.
She definitely dated a pasty white guy or
well,
two.
That's him. Whoever.
She's the queen of the dating apps, by the way. She's who I go to and say, what do you think of him? And she'll decipher very quickly through somebody's profile, you know, what their idiosyncrasies can be. And she's usually pretty bang on, so... Yeah, there is definitely an ashen male out there that she has
dated in her past. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
definitely.
If I get back on it, I'm going to have her come and look at my profile. Because like I said, whatever I was writing, obviously somehow
you should.
Was sending out the wrong signals.
She's kind of the dating app guru, if you ask me. She's got a beautiful blog that that she writes a lot about the dating app world.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
On her blog?
Yeah.
That's an interesting...
It's called Ready for My Last First Date.
Oh, that sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds... I was going to say it's funny, but that sounds kind of romantic.
Yes, but she's also very funny.
Yeah, I'm sure it's funny.
She's
also
got some wonderful
All right, now here's your name, Joey Bothwell.
Yeah.
Bello the Joy.
Oh, that's so true.
That's you.
I am big and boisterous and full of joy. I was just writing an application, actually, for a grant for my production company, and they ask a lot about what it is that your, you know, what makes your artistic vision different.
Yeah.
And I say to people, you know, and it's not lost on me that my name is one letter away from joy. And it's because I have a huge access to joy. I talk a lot in some of the self-care work that I do with clients of mine about the garden hose of your life. Mm. And mine is very joy-filled. I can turn a dark Sam Shepard piece into a very joyful experience, and that's just kind of innately in me.
All right.
Yeah.
So Bello the Joy. That's
Bello
totally
the Joy.
Right. All right. Well, here's one more for your name. I wasn't sure what this was.
The Jolly Bowl.
Now, I just wanted to I had to check this.
The
Jolly Bowl. A bowl.
Jolly Bowl.
A bowl is a tree trunk.
Oh.
And
the jowls?
Well, that's why I was like, what the hell does this even mean, a jowly bowl?
What does that mean to me?
Yeah.
I mean, the base of it, you know, having a little excess, but then growing into something beautiful.
Okay.
How's that?
I don't, yeah. Why did I write that one down?
I don't know. I dig it, though. I think because it looks pretty.
It does.
J-O-W-L-Y-B-O-L-E.
I think that was what it was. Yeah. I liked the look of it or the sound of it.
Yeah.
And even though I couldn't make any association, like nothing popped.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I wanted to include it.
Yeah, maybe the foundation of something.
Now I'm getting that it's an old restaurant. It's an old restaurant in New England, the Jowly Bowl. You know, like a place where these old geezers go.
And absolutely.
Got their hats and
their curmudgeons.
Pipes. Yes.
That all sit there and it smells like brute.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking more like sawdust and tobacco and
sure.
But a brute, okay.
You know, a little musky something.
Yeah, musky for sure. Yeah. That's what it is. The Jowly Bowl.
The Jowly Bowl.
That
I like
would
it.
Be, right? It's not well lit.
No.
No, it's a dark. No, that if I ever open a bar.
That's what we're calling it.
The Jowly Bowl.
I feel like I should take some credit for that. Get right. A percentage at least.
Yeah, you're going to, yeah. you'll get, no problem. The Jowly Bowl. Okay, now here's, now these, I haven't seen the play, but these two might make some sense. Here's the last one. Slim and Caval,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Those are the two main characters.
Yeah.
And so read that one.
Valid manacles. Maniacles?
Yeah. Manacles.
Manacles.
You know, like handcuffs or things where people get locked up. That's
that's
manacle, right?
That's completely it. I mean, these two characters are completely tethered to each other, to the past, to the idea of something greater.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it is. We've talked a lot about the play being a little bit of a purgatory for them.
Right.
So that is definitely dead on the nose.
Okay, valid manacles. Yeah, I figured, you know, they're not literally locked up, but they're locked in the room for these 2 days. They're connected to each other.
They are definitely
and
locked
what you
to
said,
each other.
Now they have goals and aspirations, mm-hmm. and they are places where they're going and places where they've been and all that.
Yeah.
God, I mean, knowing what little I know about the two of them, all that's in there.
And that's the only thing they can do is to untether from each other, to make any of that real. But they don't want to because it's so comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or uncomfortable. Okay, here's the last one. Slim and Caval, anagrams to this.
Dismal Valance.
No, I looked up Valance again just to make sure that I was getting that right.
Yeah.
But it is it's kind of curtain. And I'm just going to guess that at the Chelsea Hotel that they had some awful curtains there.
Yes, ours are really ugly orange. Really ugly pumpkin, dismal orange.
Dismal Valance.
Yeah.
See, on your set we have that.
This is true, yes. Yeah, and it's, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's beautiful, actually, because it is, I mean, she's kind of the veil he wears.
Ah.
Is this kind of dismal, dark veil, and you know, spoiler alert, at the end of the play he, you know, pulls it off maybe and sees something different.
So what do you mean she is a veil that he wears? That's a strong image.
Yeah, he hides in her. He has a wife and a kid in the play.
Yeah.
And they've moved to Brooklyn, and they've been in this room together, you know, in this purgatory together, hiding from real life.
Right, okay.
You know, and I think we do that.
Yeah.
I know we do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I've hidden in my own dismal valance in different people throughout my life. So this is definitely bang on the nose with Slim and Caval for sure.
So we have a literal dismal valance, an ugly curtain. Yes, that's there. But then it can also be something we hide behind.
Yeah.
Either for protection or shame or escape or something.
Yeah. Well, Caval's name means to escape.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, to be on the run.
In what language? It looks Italian.
French.
French. Caval?
En Caval.
Oh.
Means escape. That's literally the last line that I say in the play.
Isn't the word for horse like cavallo or something?
To go on the run.
Yeah, but that's the French word for a horse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well then that makes sense. Then now they're related.
Yeah, and I think in the Urban Dictionary they talk about being en caval. It's like you're on the run from the cops.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That That's a good way. That's a good word. I never heard that before. Yeah. I'm going to use that again. Anything else we want to say about the show before we sign off? And
please come see it. Come check it out. It's a labor of love. It's a beautiful, beautiful labor of love.
Yeah.
And it's good. I can say that. I feel that as somebody who did the show once.
Yeah.
And gave a nice performance.
Yes, yeah, you this, like it. It feels solid.
This feels solid.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. All right. Well, the play is Cowboy Mouth, written by Sam Shepard and Patti Smith. It's at the Actors Company, 916 North Formosa Avenue, part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival, happening right now. I would like to thank my guest, producer-performer Joey Bothwell. Yes, go and see her play. Tickets go to hollywoodfringe.org or hff18.org.
You can also get them on jbothwellproductions.com.
jbothwellproductions.com. Okay. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Marmel. You have been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We'll be back. Thanks, Joey.
Thank you.